Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And here we are after missing a week. That was my fault. I was at the National Association of Broadcasters.
That's important.
And lost wages.
How was it?
I only lost about a dollar.
Okay. How about weight? Did you gain any weight? Lose any weight?
No.
Any experience?
The show was great.
Oh, it was, huh?
Yeah, I don't go to that show as often as I should, now that I think about it.
Any big names?
Well, it depends on who, you know, if you know various lighting directors, I suppose there are big names.
Mm. Are there any gaffers there?
I'm sure there were lots of gaffers there.
listen, give them the date stamp here because I think they should know what date it is, just in case.
Yes, it is 4/16, day after tax day.
Yep,
2013.
And I wrote John today. I said, John, we're on tonight, making sure we're on. And he said, absolutely, we have to do it. And because there's some pretty cool things that are happening around the world, right?
Absolutely.
So I'm sure that you
and none
of
them are
fun.
Being covered because they're all covering the bombing.
I know that's a lot of coverage. I mean, every channel was all bomb all the time.
How much coverage does this bombing need? I don't know.
Well, now they get into the whole life issue and how people helping people and the humanitarian part of it. And I mean, that's nice. But I agree. I mean, it's, I think we should be onto some other things here, maybe some of the other areas. I mean, but it needs coverage. I think it needs to remind people that we're vulnerable and that, the fact is that once we become complacent and maybe stop checking surroundings and big events, this is the kind of thing that can happen.
No, we should have a clampdown. We should just put tracking devices on everybody and get it over with. So,
nice. I like it.
Meanwhile, gold.
Oh, what happened?
I think more importantly.
Yeah, that was fun.
Fell through the floor. So what happened? You said you had some insight into this.
Well, yeah, there's a few different things that went on. First of all, gold has been on a relatively downward trajectory. The dollar's been moving higher. And this has gone on for a little while, a number of weeks, months. But it hadn't seen any really here and there, a little pop, a little drop, nothing major. But, I'll just set the stage with the fact that I think that the collateral damage potential from this grand yen experiment that's going on in Japan,
mm-hmm.
where they basically said, it's all out war on our own currency. We're going to double the monetary base within about 2 years. We want inflation to be 2%, which is almost a ridiculous percentage change from where it is now. We've been in a deflationary spiral for some time. What happened is that not only did the talk and the talking the yen down up until the point when they actually came out with the stimulus package do a lot of damage to currencies around the world and commodities and all sorts of things, but then when they came out with a package that was above and beyond expectations, which they had to do because otherwise they would have been right back where they started, but they really came out with, a significant amount of stimulus and the yen continued to drop. Their JGBs, the bonds went crazy. And this is all part of that because it's so ridiculous, the level. Now, put that in the backdrop. And one of the things that happened is that you start having people selling the yen. And you usually do a – I think we talked about this. We do currency against something else. You don't just sell the yen. You have to do something with it, right? So you find – against the dollar, so the dollar goes up, you buy the dollar, the euro goes up for no reason, they're buying European bonds, they're buying gold, they're buying all sorts of things with this. So that's one thing. The second thing is that really kind of, I think, which was part of this, was that the Fed has been kind of hinting that they want to start thinking about maybe slowing down or withdrawing the stimulus or, if nothing else, maybe slowing down the bond buying they're doing. So that's kind of been in the background of some people's minds also, and the dollar's been going up. And finally, I think the straw that broke the camel's back was when, miracle of miracles, surprises of surprises, Cyprus needed more money than they originally thought for the bailout. You're surprised, right?
Well, I'm not surprised by any of this because I don't know how much of it is necessary, true, or otherwise. And I would like to ask before you go on with this finish, when did the Japanese decide that they wanted to jack up the yen, and why did it take so long? I mean, what changed? Because they were, they should have probably done this, I don't know, 2 years ago.
They tried. They did. They tried.
Well, what now? How could they accomplish it now and not before?
New central banker in.
Yeah, but
Abe, and he, I mean, just really said that everything's on the table, and they just huge amounts of since last November, they started talking it up almost daily, maybe twice a day, and they started talking about how they're going to do everything to drop this, and they're going to, you know, really reinvigorate the economy. And
so it didn't happen before because the other central banker was insincere.
I don't think he was strong enough, and the amount, it was kind of like a pea shooter to a war.
Okay,
that's what it seemed like to me. And there was other options because you weren't seeing a lot of fighting from them. So what they do is you sell the dollar because, you know, really you had, what do you have? You had Bernanke, who was the main firepower that was dropping the dollar down, and you didn't see that strength on the other side. So what you would do is you just throw the money into the yen, and even though fundamentally it shouldn't have been there, and you sell the dollar off because you know that Bernanke's just going to continue with what he's doing for some time, and that's going to kill the dollar. The euro was a wild card. Go in, you go out, you go in, you go out. You just play with it, but it's not fundamentally there either. And where else are you going to go? You know, Swiss already came up with protection against their currency last year. You don't want to mess with them. So anyway, so now they come up with this massive mega nuclear bomb kind of thing. And so the straw that broke the camel's back was Cyprus now has to come up with more money. So the eurozone's like, what? Wait a second. You know, we didn't want to deal with this to begin with. We told you to get the money from depositors, and that kind of blew up in our faces.
Steal it from the bank depositors. Right. Yeah, that's a good
one. So you just said, you know what, go sell your gold or something, and you can get the money that way. Go sell your gold and commodities. Well, now, if you think about that, if that's something they're going to start doing, the central bank starts doing from Cyprus, back to the old setting precedent for what happens when Italy needs more money. Well, they're going to go after the depositors. Then they're going to say, screw you. Go after your own gold pile. What happens if Spain needs money? Kind of goes down the list of things because the eurozone is trying to make sure that each of these central banks and each of the – or not central banks, but the countries and their banks are don't create a moral hazard more than they have already. So now when the word gets on the street that Cyprus is going to be selling their gold, that's it. All over. Add that all up and the whole thing goes to crap. Gold starts selling off, and it doesn't stop because you don't want to be in, you know, you never want to be in front or you don't want to be in the back of the line after a central bank starts doing something or after a country starts doing something because they do it in large quantities.
Right, and you really can't you're at the mercy of the market.
Right, so the market got ahead of it, or at least got in sync with it, and silver got even more obliterated.
Yeah,
horrible. So gold goes down and just gets whacked. I mean, it was just like I was like, whoa, what's happening? That was ridiculous. So then let me add one more thing because I know this is kind of long, but there's something else that's always been bothering me, and I think we've talked about this. There are ETFs out there, particularly the GLD, that holds gold. You could buy the shares in any quantity, sell it whenever you want, and they actually have the behind this. It's not futures. It's not paper. It's actually gold backing up the ETF. So they got gigantic vaults, and they fill it with gold when you buy and all that, and they keep on amassing this and all. And I'm thinking to myself for some time, let me just think about this for a second. Gold supply and demand. You have a block of money that's now in gold, and it keeps on growing. And it's actually in some warehouse somewhere doing nothing but sitting there. What happens one day when there's some selling? They'll be selling eventually. What happens one day when they're selling, and all of a sudden now not only is the selling happen, but this ETF needs to actually sell also to meet redemptions or to keep it equalized. And you have this major flood of gold on the market. Doesn't that just kill pricing?
I would think.
Yeah. So I've always been kind of really nervous about that. Everybody says, what are you talking about? That's not what it is. Supply and demand. You know, the price will equalize. I'm like, I don't think so because it's not like it's going to be consumed. It's just going to be like laying out there and that's just more.
Right. It's a non-consumable. You're right. It's just essentially a useless asset, essentially.
Right.
I mean, there's some industrial use for gold, but for the most part, it just sits there.
Right. And so now I think you add that all together, and that's what happened. Then the next day that comes along, there's a kind of a real panic sell that went on. Gold was down the largest dollar amount that has ever been down in history. I think back in, I think it was the 80s or so, there was a bigger percentage gain, percentage loss. But it was down big time. I mean, I kept watching it go down, and I was like, wow. I mean, it just wouldn't stop. And it was going down, you know, a dollar at a time, $2 at a time, and kind of slowing down, then going down again. Hmm. And I think last night it touched 1317, 1315. It was like 1570 the couple days before.
Yeah.
So, and like I said, silver took even a bigger beating. Now, one of the other things that took a beating were the gold miners. Have you looked at them?
No, but they always, if gold goes like this, the miners just go into the pot.
There is a triple leveraged ETF, two of them, that buy the miners. One of them is called Dust, D-U-S-T,
mm-hmm.
and that's a positively correlated. And then there's Nugget, N-U-G-T. And Dust was down 30 – excuse me, Dust was up. Dust is the short. Dust was up about 31%. So that means that the miners were down on average 10%. That's pretty rough on Monday. So we, at the end of the day, we actually shorted that. So we shorted the short. Because oftentimes when you short the triple short, you get a better return than going long the triple long, if you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah, efficiency. Because of the nature of these things that you've tried to explain a couple of times, and it's understandable that it's kind of wacky.
Yeah, it's just, but it's a fact. It's like one of those things. It's the old, you know, I don't understand why the seesaw, when one guy goes up and the other guy goes down.
Yeah, because one guy's fat, you know, and the other guy's skinny. Right. You can't figure it out.
Don't think about it. It is what it is, right? You know, it's
yeah, these
kind
things
of,
are leverage funny.
Right.
It's the only way to put it.
So what happened is, we shorted, and we actually made about 10% on that. It was up, it was down about 10% when the market opened today, and it kind of hung out there for a little while. Then towards the middle of the day, or towards the end of the day, we actually bought it again. Now, this thing went from down 10% to up about 5% by the end of the day.
Hmm.
That means that the gold miners got whacked again. And so there's a lot of damage going on out there. And you know Paulson, the famous hedge fund manager?
Yeah, the guy who called the credit default swaps Paulson.
Yeah, he made a lot of money. A lot of money. Well, fast forward, we won't go through all the agony of his next couple of years in the markets, but this year, I think his gold-based fund, he has some funds, hedge funds that are backed in gold. You know, you could buy it. It's your choice. I think it was down 33% year-to-date. Okay? That was before gold started coming down hard.
Oh.
On the first day that gold came down hard, he was he lost $300 million personally. Personally.
Wow.
That hurts. That's like a bad day at the office, you know? The second day he lost more. He's out about, in the last, however, I think five or six, whatever period of time is, the calculation is something like $1 billion personally.
Which is amusing because here's a guy who made some billions on his credit default swap play, which was a big one. And then he said, you know, I just imagine you do this, you make all these billions, and you say, I got to find some really conservative thing to put my money in because I don't really want to lose anything. And you put it in gold, and you lose big time.
Right. I mean, most people thought that gold was immune. And there's other reasons, by the way. A lot of people think, well, gold is coming down. It's really been hurt because the economies around the world are stabilized. U.S. is doing well. And the whole fear and panic situation is over. They say there's no inflation going to be seen ever. I don't think
that chance.
Yeah, I'm saying I don't really buy that exactly either. I think it was really these other things. It was just a matter of massive amounts of pushing between the Cyprus situation and the fear about that. So we'll see. It tried to come back a bit today. It was up a bit and then ended up kind of just nowhere. But we had another crash also in the last week or so.
What?
And this one, Bitcoin.
Oh, yeah, Bitcoin. Yeah.
This is right
it's
after
funny we'd even be talking about it.
We outed them.
Yeah, that it was us.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We outed them, and the Bitcoin went to, I think the price of per Bitcoin, which has been kind of slowly, very slowly rising over time, kind of started to really pick up speed when, like, 2 months ago.
Yeah, and then it really started going about a week and a half ago or 2 weeks ago.
Right, and then it was worth about $250 per Bitcoin.
Yeah.
And now it's worth 90.
Yeah, well, it's still not the real crash. When it's worth $1.50, then I'll, or 25 cents dime.
Well, a lot of readers sent in explanations of Bitcoin. Did you get any of those that I sent over to you?
Yeah, I get those ever so often. My eyes glaze over. I mean, I understand the mechanism and the supposed. I still don't see how there's any value whatsoever.
The thing that bothers me is it's like, you know, the Bitcoin is like gold. I can say that, right? Where it's a certain amount.
Yeah, but you can actually collect the gold and make a little ring or something out of it.
Right. But the other thing about Bitcoin is that there's one person that hit all these things, or one group or whatever, that hit all these little things that you have to. I get stuck on the whole computer mining thing. It's just overwhelming to me to think that this really goes on. You know, the whole. I don't want to talk about it. It's annoying. But anyway.
It's annoying. By the way, so the Japanese, we didn't go back, but the yen is now at 98.
Yeah.
I mean, it's almost.
It was at 99.75 the other day.
It's like we talked about it being 100, which seems to be the right price to me. Like within just a few months ago when it was still 75.
Yeah. No, I'm telling you, this is crazy.
This moves so quickly that it actually astonishes me. Now, the euro, which has gone back up to $1.31, I think it could make the same kind of downturn and get back down to sub one.
It's possible, but the problem is that they're trying to hold it. It's a whole different thing because they're trying to hold the euro up. They're trying to talk it up and make sure that it's solid.
But why? It's no good for your – I mean, when we had our – I mean, having the Japanese yen at 75 was great for our exports. It slowed down the Japanese taking over our auto industry, for one thing. I mean, Toyotas and Lexuses cost too much money. And now, with this kind of huge discount, this means that all these cars from Japan, which are, not to offend anyone, but they're superior products, generally speaking – now we're going to be priced to move. I mean, this is not a good thing for our economy.
It's not at all a good thing for our economy. I think this is – honestly, this is – they've been waiting to get us back. They've been waiting for 50 years, 60 years to get us back, and this is the perfect setup. So they're going to do everything they can to crush the dollar or crush the yen against the dollar. And what's happening though, John, I'll tell you something. Everything is about the yen. All you have to do is watch the yen and you'll know – what to do in the markets, essentially, you know, on a daily basis, which is a little crazy, but it's all about the yen. If the yen is doing well and growing down in value and it's being sold off, then they're putting money into other assets. Look at what happened yesterday with that big sell-off in the markets yesterday. The yen was up like it gained almost, what, 1.75% on the day. So, you know, you got to watch what's going on here. And so that means that the dollar was down pretty significantly against the yen, and still, when the dollar's down, it's good for us. But our market sold off the worst sell-off since November yesterday.
Right,
small caps down 4%, Dow down 275, S&P
now,
down.
Now, explain how this makes any sense whatsoever.
No, it doesn't. It's a big problem. I this is what I think. If you take a water balloon and it's filled and it's very tight, and you put it in your hand and you squeeze it. It doesn't just squeeze together, right? What happens is it starts bulging in all sorts of different ways through your fingers, and you know, you may get an area that just bulges too much and then pops, right? Same thing that's happening. These guys are insane. This whole yen thing is way over the top. The collateral damage and the unintended consequences of this, I think, are going to be enormous. And I think we've seen it in gold already. I mean, that was quick, right? They did the deal. We saw markets, you know, move up really significantly, and all of a sudden we're already seeing you know, dramatic drops. We're seeing, you know, corn and commodities dropping. Oil, remember me, am I bitching about oil at 97?
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there, you know, talk about, you know, grousing or whatever we call it these days. Talk about me. I was like, what is on my podcast that the disciplined investor, I'm like, what is going on here? This is not right. We got the highest inventory of oil in like 20 something years. And every time oil goes down, it gets bought. Every time it goes down, it gets bought. It's at 97. I said, this is the most ridiculous thing. But you know what? You can't get too attached to the idea because you'd never make money. And then all of a sudden, you know, when you're not looking, oil drops from 97 to 93. Okay. Usually what happens is they'll drive it back up, right? Then it goes down. Yeah. Next thing you know, last night was 86 and change.
Yeah. Sitting at 88 right now.
I mean, it's ridiculous. You know, all of a sudden, why? People are concerned. I thought the economies were doing better. What about copper? Copper fell off a cliff. So, I mean,
in today's world with all the building going on, it makes no sense that copper would not be really stable.
Right. China comes out with GDP print on Sunday night. They come out at about 7.7. The expectations were for at least 8. Yeah, the markets over there don't do too much. Japan kind of sloughs it off because they don't care. They got the yen going on. And we come in Monday, and this is what happens to our markets. It's real ugly. We also have some, you know, ugly numbers that are printed on our economics as well. Housing was okay, not great. You know, the unemployment situation. What we're getting is these giant bubbles. Who is buying the stocks? Why are stocks going up throughout the day on a regular basis, even when they drop in the morning, aside from yesterday, even when they drop big in the morning for some really good news items that really should fundamentally move things down, and then they just throughout the day just move on up? Who's doing the incremental buying? I mean, is it the retail investors like, oh, I'm going to keep on buying here and plug my money in? They don't do that. They get spooked and freaked out on every situation, right? It's got to be somewhere where money's coming. It's buyers from overseas.
Yeah, it's got to be. It's got to be mostly buyers from overseas, even Japan.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, Japan, because they got, you know, they're trying to get the money out of there.
Yeah.
They don't want to keep that money there. Oh, anyway. Let's see.
It's a phony. The market is just a house of cards.
And you're just plugging that Netflix show that you like.
I've only seen the beginning of one episode.
Well, we want to watch the whole thing. It's all available.
Yes, I know. I just don't know. You know, I watch certain things. I have like a limited viewing repertoire because I can't just be watching television all the time. And I watch a lot of junk shows, I admit. But I don't watch, you know, I just don't sit down and start watching stuff. And that right now, I just can't sit down and watch it because I know I'm going to end up watching the whole damn thing.
Right. I get it. All right, so we get some earnings. You know, we're in the heart of earnings season. As a matter of fact, I gave you, attached to this an email, the earnings spec sheet for the week, the cheat sheet I call it, which gives you the highlighted earnings of companies and where they are. One of the really interesting things is we're seeing that a lot of earning estimates are coming down dramatically. Always happens right before earnings season. Isn't it a miracle in a company that beats by a penny, 2 pennies? I mean, boy, these analysts are good, aren't they? I mean, wow, and amazing. The companies are great. They're always beating the analysts. Yeah, how in the world does that happen? One of the things that happens is there's, you know, analysts get guidance and there's like, well, kind of a different language that's talked when they talk to the people at the firm, and there's, you know, they adjust their numbers.
They write something on a little piece of paper and slide it across the desk.
Yeah, one wink means 1 penny beat. 2 winks means 2 penny beat. No wink means we're going to miss. You know, so Intel comes out and yes, they came out and they basically met and on everything, did a little bit better here and there and all that. But one of the things that happened, I looked at it, the stock's up about 3% after hours, and I'm looking at the numbers, and I'm kind of pouring through some of the stuff, the key highlights, and I said, wow, look at that. That's interesting. Their margins are 56%, which is nice, but tech companies like that have good margins. And but I look back, and I saw, you know what? Last year was about 64%. And this is something that's looked at very closely when it comes to a tech firm like Intel. What's their gross margins? So what's happening is their cost factors are going up somewhere. And so the stock's up about 3.5%, and there's all sorts of excitement about it. You see the stock popping after hours. And I said, you know what? I was talking to a couple of guys. I said, you know, this is not going to stay. And all that full amount pulled back. So, you know, what we're finding is weak PC sales. No surprise. You know, and generally there is just a weakness in the whole, we'll call it electronics / PC computer sector.
Yeah. Yeah. Big time.
Now, do you see that report that came out last week about the PC sales?
Yeah.
Oof. That was horrible, huh?
Well, it's not without some note of explanation. I mean, for one thing, I wrote a column on it. I think in PC Magazine, discussing it to some little bit, saying that...
How many articles do you write that you can't remember what for
Magazine? That's the problem. I write too many articles. I don't remember anything. So I remember the themes, generally speaking. I can remember this one, which is that Windows 8 is a huge flop.
Yeah, that's it. That's what the blame has been put on.
Brought the whole thing to a halt because nobody cares.
Can you imagine the concept you know, hey, Microsoft guy knocks on your door. We'd like to put Windows 8 on your server. You're like, huh? What? No, I don't think so. Thank you very much. You know, I mean, the flipping panels, the whole thing. It's like you can't if you have epilepsy, God forbid, you can't look at that screen.
Yeah, that's true. You know? It's funny, but true.
Yeah. So Intel comes out with that, and they were down last week when the earnings when the number came out about the PC sales that were down just some really horrible number. Microsoft was down 5%. Intel was down. You just across the board, things got cut up pretty badly. So there was a lot of expectation for something good coming out of Yahoo. Yahoo's been doing pretty good lately in terms of a turnaround situation, right?
Well,
at least their stock.
Yeah, the stock looks great.
Mm-hmm. So their profit rose 36%, and there was some kind of rebound in some of the areas. But I guess it was there was a real problem with their display ads. And a lot of – you see a lot of news talking about it, totally of a disastrous quarter talking about the display ads. What's the deal with that? What's the problem?
I don't know.
I mean, what do you think? I'm speculating.
Well, the online advertising doesn't work with the way it's presented. It sucks. It stinks.
Yeah, that's true. I can't remember the last time I ever clicked something unless it was totally by accident.
Yeah, I haven't clicked on anything for a long time.
I have an aversion, as a matter of fact, from staying. I stay away from all the stuff on the top of Google. You know, stuff that's in yellow or whatever, or the color-coded stuff, or the sponsored ads. I never click those.
I actually have occasionally when I'm actually looking to buy something.
Mm. Those things cost a lot of money these days per click.
Yeah.
So,
no, there's something wrong amiss with all the online advertising. You know, this happened in the late 90s when the dot-com crash happened, I guess in 2001
One.
Period.
Yep, 2001, yeah.
People took a good close look at the advertising thing and said, you know, this isn't working. And online advertising just kind of dried up because all the advertisers said, well, what are we doing? And so they kind of forgot about that, and they've all come back on board, but I don't see that as working any better.
Yeah, I don't – you know, I think it's a combination of a lot of things. It's the whole you know, I mean, what's the real difference between that and television? I guess television, you're stuck unless you have a fast-forward thing with a recording. You're stuck watching the commercial. It's sometimes funny.
Actually, with the most people, myself included, I pre-record stuff on the DVR, and then I run past most of those ads. Curiously, I will stop at an ad that I think is this famous ad. When Apple had their Mac versus PC ads and I saw that swinging by, I would stop and watch it.
Yeah, you stopped for the Aflac bird. The last one was pretty funny.
I don't really stop for the Aflac bird.
Oh, it was funny.
But
he was in a Aflac duck was in a hospital with a broken beak and broken wing, laying in bed. And the doctor walks in with a couple of residents and says, "What do you see?" One person says, "I see. Looks like a little broken beak, broken wing." The other one says, "Yeah, I see a little bit of a problem here." The other one says, "I see lunch." Well, the Aflac ducks, you see the blood pressure machine go crazy. You see the pulse thing go crazy, and he's breathing heavy. And the next thing you know, the lunch comes in the room and is delivered to the Aflac duck from the hospital, right? And then everything goes down and all that. It was very funny.
It's cute.
Yeah. Anyway, I agree. So how do we say that? Then how do you say that television advertising works? If you have the opportunity to just pass right over it, or same thing as with online ads. Because what else are you going to do? You're not going to have online ads pop out of your TV, your screen, are you?
No. I have no idea what they're going to do, but I think they're going to have to do something different because these advertising initiatives, I think most of them have gone to hell.
Well, it's the same thing with newspapers. I mean, you know, it's the same kind of advertising. You look at it, you don't look at it. The difference is the presentation of what's in your face and what possibly is entertaining, as opposed to something that's flat, you have to read, or you can just pass right over it, or get tricked into clicking something.
People
don't like to be tricked.
I don't know what. To be honest about it, I have no idea what they're going to do. It's just
right, I gotta find something that you know about because you're not helping at all tonight. You're not carrying yourself tonight, buddy.
Hey, I just said I'm trying.
All right, let's talk about some things that I know things that you could talk about. You ready?
Yeah.
You're real good with this kind of stuff. Two senators got letters to the post office with Ryzen in it today. You see that?
No.
Oh, no. Yes. They discovered and they confirmed Ryzen was in two letters to senators. It was at the pre-sort facility where I guess they look for this stuff.
Oh, they must have a Ryzen detector.
Yep.
Sure.
Pretty crazy, huh?
Yeah. This is no agenda material.
Yeah. I got another one for you.
Okay.
How about the bird flu?
Oh, yeah, the new one.
Yeah.
H5N9 or whatever the hell it is.
Like, yeah. The numbers don't even look good. The thing is that this is much more dangerous in terms of the impact of how it affects your body. It seems to be a cross. What is it? A cross between like a duck, a pigeon, and a pelican or something.
Nobody
I don't know, something
knows. Some bad is bad if yeah, you get it.
I want to know how those guys got together, but that's another story. You know, the duck, the pigeon, and the chicken.
Maybe they had a fight. I have no idea.
Anyway, so yeah, this is actually spreading. Is it spreading more than the last whole bird flu thing that went on? Or all I can tell you is my understanding is it's very dangerous. There's no particular cure. It's very fast in terms of acting. So this is something we have to watch because you don't want that kind of stuff happening in China with the concentration of people you have in places, as well as the lack of any kind of, in many places, the lack of what's the word I'm looking for?
Hygiene, maybe. They haven't found any human to human transmission, so that's a good thing.
Well, maybe they're just all dead.
That's possible. I mean, people do die all over China, and it's not as though everyone looks for bird flu every time somebody drops dead.
5 million people could die; you wouldn't even know.
Spit in the bucket.
Right. Nothing. Maybe that's why that guy dumped 9,000 hogs into the river.
That was 14,000 by now.
Yeah, I think it was 150,000, actually. Well,
whatever. A lot of dead pigs.
But maybe it was from the swine flu. Hoof and mouth.
Well, I wish they would explain this. That story is, now that you mention it, has kind of just drifted off the radar, all the dead pigs.
Yep. That was weird.
Yes, indeed.
And the weirder part is thinking about what they do after that. Did they have to go get them out? And somehow these really bloated, waterlogged pigs?
Yeah. Many probably at the moment of explosion.
Yeah, no, it's not good. So this is going on, and actually just stand by because you're going to hear an idea in our stock picks to play along with the bird flu. It's a play-at-home bird flu game.
Mm.
No, it's actually interesting. We'll talk about that. I don't. You know, you want to talk about the Boston Marathon? I mean,
we don't need to talk about saturated. That. Everyone's talking about it. Yeah. What do we know?
Yeah, exactly.
But let's talk about JCPenney.
Oh, that's great.
Now, the great thing about this story is that, of course, Martha Stewart had signed on for the mini store at JCPenney's and testified about how great Johnson was. He's a genius, she says, to get out of her contract or semi out of her contract. It was Macy's, I believe, that she had some special exclusive deal with, but she said it didn't matter because these mini stores are not competing with her Macy's deal, which I'm not in disagreement with that. I think a lot of companies are always a little freaky about secondary channels appearing that may eat into their sales when, in fact, it may help their sales, which has always bothered me that these guys don't see it that way. But that's okay. They have their right. And meanwhile, now Johnson's fired.
Well, and there's a restraining – I'm not kidding here. Now, let me think of which one this is. There's a restraining order. Is it Macy's against JCPenney or JCPenney against Macy's? They definitely filed, and I didn't realize a company can have a restraining order against another company. I don't understand what that means. Like the company is going to, one of the buildings is going to attack the other building?
I have no idea. It's like, well, they're people, supposedly.
I guess. But John, now here's the best part of the story. So, Bill Ackman, who's a big proponent, owns like some ungodly amount of this company, of JCPenney, and owned it from a very high level to a very low level. It stood behind Johnson. Everybody stood behind Johnson, the Apple store genius, the guy, oh, my God, the reason why Apple retail took off and all this. Meanwhile,
it's Macy's seeking the restraining order against JCPenney's.
That's
what it looks like.
I don't understand it, but okay.
Macy's wants to temporarily halt to JCPenney's sales of Stewart or something.
That's what it is.
Okay, go on.
So now, by the way, The reason why JCPenney won the argument on this whole issue is because they're not competition. They have no business. How could they be competition? Right?
Yeah.
So now here's what happens. So Johnson, this genius and all that, does this. Now he's not only gonna remake and remodel Macy's into JCPenney into this unbelievable superstore of some sort.
Yeah, where is one of these things, by the way? He's been in there for how many years?
Yes, 2 years and lots of money. Yeah. There's a few of them. But the bigger issue
New logo.
Yeah, that was good. The bigger issue was he, you know, did same everyday pricing and did a few other things that were confusing. And it almost seems like he cooked it up at home with his wife. What would you like? Oh, I'd love if they just had one convenient price because, man, I get confused. You know, and this
it's
you know,
so confusing, these right. sales. I don't get it.
And by the way, if I may be so bold as to state, Saturn, the car company, had a no commission, one price car that made it easy for people to buy, right? Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Anybody want to tell me where there's a Saturn dealership I can go to?
Well, you know, a lot of this has to do with, I don't know if Johnson got was susceptible to this sort of argument or not. It seems unlikely because he has too much experience. But in marketing and sales in particular, it's a known fact that people say one thing and do another. So you don't want to ever ask them their opinions because they'll lie to you. I mean, this is like if you ask people what kind of television they watch. I always put educational TV. I watch the highfalutin stuff. And then they watch junk. Right, you know, they watch reality TV, but you have to actually spy on them or trick them into telling you what they really do because they always lie. And when it comes to marketing and sales, they lie the most. Oh yeah, no, I would be great if they didn't have these crazy sales are beneath me. And you know, of course, they won't go in and shop at all after they halt the sales.
Right.
He was, well, I think foolish the way he managed the his. Yeah, I mean, he could have done a million things differently, and one of them would have been, why was you changing the basic model of the store that people relied on, which was these sales? I mean, Penny's was a sales maniac store.
Right. And fast forward to, he said, okay, I guess this isn't working. Let's just change back. That was kind of the death knell for his career, I think, on that situation. But you know what? People do like sales. I mean, my wife, she comes home and, hey, do you like this dress? That's nice. Like, how much do you think it was? She says, I don't know. She said, how much? I'm like, oh God, I'm not getting out of this till I say something. So it's $50 or whatever. Ah, it's funny you say that. It was $62, close. I said, oh, she goes, but 40% off today only. I said, oh my God, that's great. It's unbelievable.
Today only.
She says, do you think that was a good deal? I'm like, yeah, that was a good deal. It looks like a good deal to me. She goes, oh, okay. You know, it happened to have been on this one rack over here that was the only one left, and it was a seasonal issue, and it was another 40% off of that. I said, you got to be kidding me. That's unbelievable.
She got it. They actually paid her to take it.
By the time you're done, it's like $3, okay? And she likes going through this routine of telling me these things because what a deal she got, right, on this thing.
Yeah.
People like the sale. They like getting a deal. You want to say, oh, I don't buy sale items. No, because they're junk. They're old. People like sale items. Now, here's what happened. This is the best part of the story. Johnson, it's announced after the market closes one day last week or so, Johnson is out. All right, so now you got to check around to see if it's a real deal, if it's really happening, whatever. Everybody always predicted that if Johnson's out, stock goes up, right? So what happens? Stock goes up like 16%. And starts coming in a little. You know, it's ever so slightly. It's 14%. It's all right, people taking profits, whatever. Okay. It starts moving down a little bit, just a little bit lower, just a little bit lower. And then it starts coming down hard. Why? They announce who the next CEO is. The next CEO is the old CEO.
Right. Maybe they'll bring Johnson back in a couple of years.
Yeah, that Johnson replaced because they needed this whole – it's like, oh, my God, you got to be kidding me. And the guy's like 68 years old, which is not old, but, you know, I mean, maybe some fresh ideas would be good. But the ailing JCPenney under him had to have a replacement. I mean, how do you replace a CEO that is not doing the job and your store is hurting and all sorts of problems and then bring in somebody else who kills the whole deal and then bring back the other guy?
It makes no sense.
You could have just gone out and got anybody.
Today's boards are a bunch of boneheads.
Yep.
They make too much money as board members to begin with. And they're all part of a clique. You know, this board member's on this board and this guy's on that one. And it's almost like a little clique of guys that are on 10 boards and they're all the same guys. And they're incompetent. They all just hire their pals. They don't even do any real work.
Right. Well, it's a sweet deal. But let me just tell you the final punchline of all this. after the day is done, JCPenney's down like 15%. So it spiked about 16, 15%, and then it was down 15%. Now, usually when you see that a CEO leaves, when the stock price goes up, you feel bad for the, oh, man, how shitty is that? The guy leaves and the stock's up 25%. He must feel terrible, right?
Yeah.
So he feels bad. Then the stock tanks when the other guy comes on. So both guys are feeling miserable that nobody likes them, right? Both guys get killed on this deal. And Ackman, who is staying with this JCPenney gig, you know, he said it's just a great company and that he really, not only that, he's really staking basically his career on Johnson because Johnson is an unbelievably brilliant guy that's going to do all this. And, man, I've been watching him and studying him. So once he goes, Ackman's like, you know, okay, maybe it's best for the company. I'm like, okay. And now he's still behind it and says that it's worth $75 a share. There you go.
The new guy? I mean, the new old guy?
No, Ackman, the hedge fund manager. Yeah, he says.
Oh, the owl head. Oh, the Ackman, the hedge fund guy.
Yep. He's the big guy in JCPenney. He's the guy that's short on Herbalife, and long.
Oh, that guy. Okay, I know who he is. Yeah.
The guy's getting it from both ends. Bad.
So he thinks pennies is worth $75. Has he been into a pennies recently?
Maybe it was 75 cents. You know, I got to look that up.
You know, I looked at the. There's a pennies up this road from me, and. I have not been to a Penny's that has been one of the redesigned ones, which I have to assume is nice.
Why?
I could be wrong. Actually, the funny thing is, I was looking at the Apple store in Emeryville, mm-hmm. which is one of the smaller ones. They have these little ones here and there. No, not the Emeryville one. There's one on 4th Street in Berkeley, which is fairly new. And I looked at it. I went in there, and I went, I think I was with my son, and I'm... Yeah, I was, because he made a comment about my comment, which was I'm going in there and I say, there's all these tables, like a bunch of these glass tables. This isn't one of the grand two-story ones. This is like a regular Apple store. A bunch of people standing around, a lot of people at these glass tables. And when I kind of stood back and looked at it, even though I really liked the idea of these stores, I just said, you know, this is kind of grim. It looks like a warehouse kind of thing, but these empty tables with computers on them and, you know, open laptops and all the rest. And it just didn't – I commented to him. I said, something's amiss here. Maybe when Johnson left, they screwed up, and they're now these stores are going to ruin the company because this is like – it was depressing. It was like a depression-style place. There wasn't anything going on. He says, no. He says, no, you're wrong. He says, this is the way they've always looked.
Yep,
except
exactly.
That you were tricked by the Steve Jobs karma and the uniqueness of the places when you first saw them. And now, as you reanalyze them, and I think he's right, he says, you've reanalyzed them in a very negative way. Because the karma is going away, it's fading, and now the reality of these stores is kind of boring, dull places with just a bunch of computers laying on tables is come to the fore. And then he assured me. I said, no, it's bull crap. There's no way. He says, no, believe me. That's what they never looked any different than this. And so now I'm very concerned.
One day there could be a revolution of people saying, what the hell are people using one button on a phone for? Who in their right mind would have a phone only with one goddamn button on it? I don't know how it could have been using this, and there's just going to be a revolution saying this is the stupidest thing we ever saw because the pixie dust is gone.
Well, those buttons, by the way, fail. That's the problem with the one button. They should have no buttons. Right, anyway, the point is that there is maybe this Johnson guy was just, you know – maybe he's overrated. I mean, Target has done better since he left.
Yeah, well, I wonder what company he'll go to and ruin. I mean, and try to work with next. I think he's done.
No. The word on the street is he's coming back to Apple.
Really?
Yeah.
And the Apple guy for the maps is going to Facebook.
Oh, I didn't know that.
These guys are doing like the tech shuffle.
Ring around the rosy.
Yeah. So let me give you a couple of things before we go, a few things. Bank earnings are coming out. You know, I said we're in the middle of earnings season, and the big week is this week. We saw J.P. Morgan come out. Revenues were down from trading and didn't look that grand, to be honest with you.
Have you seen the movie Margin Call?
No. I have, you know what? There's a bunch of those movies I haven't seen.
This one's Kevin Spacey. You're a big Kevin really Spacey.
Good. Yeah.
I watched it. It was so good. I don't know why I started watching it. I couldn't stop watching. I watched it. So then I decided I'm going to put it on a DVD and get it off my DVR. I was going to keep it, and just for the record. And I started watching it again. I couldn't stop. I watched it twice, and I didn't want to. It's that good.
Really?
It's just all drama, though. It's not like an action adventure, anything. It is just a great movie to watch.
Yeah, he's a great actor. He's good.
Yeah, it's a good acting all around.
Yeah. So the banks are coming in with earnings that are not that great, to be honest with you. And frankly, earnings haven't been great. Most earnings that come out, for the most part, stocks have been down after. Coca-Cola actually did well in spite of the fact of potential global headwinds, particularly in currencies. But they did well. But everybody else that's come out has kind of been a little bit, I think it's been kind of not great. Cirrus Logic came out with some earnings tonight, guided down significantly. Stocks down about 10%. I think that this is the trend that we look for that probably going to happen. And you can't imagine stocks at these high levels that are being bid up are going to stay there with the earnings power that they have right now. So we'll see what happens there. A couple other things, like Cliffs, for example. I want to talk about – I don't know what's going on with Barron's. This is my opinion. They're becoming more of a kind of – not a pump and dump or anything like that, but more of a rag that's hawking stuff.
A tip sheet. Touts. I don't know. Touts, like at the racetrack.
Yeah, exactly. You know, they have – that's exactly what it is. They have a I noticed that twice they had in the last, I don't know, 2 months – some analyst or somebody, you know, they always have to have somebody that says it's going up 30%, up 40%. It could double in 2 years. I'm like, it could double in 2 years. What kind of an outlook is that? I mean,
it is funny,
you know. So they come out. Somebody says Cliffs, whatever. It's been beaten down. It's really got a good this or that and this. Another one comes out a month later, and each time it comes out, Cliffs, which is a it's involved in the steel and coal kind of environment. The stock does really well for a day or so, and then it just keeps on going down. It's really an ugly situation. Well, this happened last week. I was actually short Cliffs a couple of different times for our clients, and we made good money on it. But I got to tell you something. You know, I don't know where they're getting these ideas from, and where I don't know. I'm kind of every once in a while I scan their page, their front page or so, and I'm. It's less and less these days. So anyway, last thing I want to talk to you about before we get to maybe last thing. I was at a charity event the other night, and they were all raving about this vodka that was there. I said, vodka? What? This is the best vodka I ever had, they said. I'm thinking, the best vodka is from what I know. I mean, it's the vodkas you don't really taste. You know, the smoothest vodka, right? Because vodka doesn't really have a taste. It has a little bit of taste, but, you know.
No, you know, I've done professional level wine and spirits competition tastings with vodka in the mix. And the vodkas vary in flavor to an extreme if you can spot the differences.
Well, right, but on the scale of vodka versus vodka.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. Obviously, vodka versus anything is like tasteless.
Right.
But you can tell the difference. Now, one of the things I've noticed over the it depends on what mailing list you get on, what electronic mailing list you get on. If you get on the right spirits and public relations companies lists and you start getting the press releases, this is a function of really good publicity. It's not a function of the flavor. If you want a really good tasting vodka, get Rain, which is made by Sazerac, the rye company that is in the, you know, they make bourbon and rye and those sorts of things. And Sazerac makes a vodka called Rain. It's the shape of a big raindrop is the shape of the bottle. Very tasty product. And just a really terrific vodka. Or get one of the Polish vodkas that's spelled with a W, which are the original style of vodka. And those are always generally pretty decent. But when you start hearing this is the best vodka I've ever tasted and all this other, this is nonsense. And this is because somebody is involved in one of these name-dropping campaigns, and there was a, obviously, I would suspect, a stooge in the audience.
No, it wasn't even a stooge. It, the guy that I think owns the company or something, or one of the major distributors was there, and he brought all the vodka.
Oh, yeah. Well, there you have it. Yeah.
Okay.
He wants to get the word out. He wants all you minions to, like, go pass the word around and tell your buddies about it, as if this word-of-mouth campaign is actually going to work for vodka.
Right. So let me tell you what happened. So I'm like, okay. That's interesting. I look at it. I'm like, wow, that vodka is not clear. It's kind of caramel colored. I'm thinking.
Yeah, this is wrong, by the
that's
way.
That's odd. I'm like, that's odd. That's interesting, but that's odd. Okay. So the night goes on. I didn't taste it at this point. But a few people say, oh, it's great. It's the best vodka. It's delicious. Okay. All right. Fine. And by the way, in the meantime, I find out that it's like $250 a bottle.
There you have it. Now, by the way, I'm looking at their website now, SARS.US.
Yep. Yep.
And it is over 100 5-star on this little phony review. And then it turns out this review is from Vodka Buzz. I've never heard of this website, but okay. So already I'm seeing that this is something of a marketing effort.
Yeah. So now I go. All right,
and by the way, anyone who'd pay more than $20 for a bottle of distilled pure alcohol is nuts.
Right. So I go and I say, all right, I'm going to try it. So I get the vodka. They pour it straight up in a glass for me to taste this, right? You know, just a regular glass, taste it. And I take a slug of it. I'm like, what is this? Wait a minute.
What did it taste like?
It tasted like a cognac or like a, possibly a Spanish brandy.
What?
I said, I'm not kidding. I said, wait a minute. Hold on. What is the deal? So I found out what it's made with. It's probably somewhere on the site somewhere.
I'm not seeing it.
Let's see. About the Ultra Vodka Premium Vodka. Maybe under about. They take the vodka and they make it however they make it. Then they
First document produced infused.
Yeah. So it's like they put it in cognac barrels. And so it gets that flavor of the cognac and all. And I'm thinking, so I took two sips of it and I said, this is awful. If I'm going to drink vodka, I want to drink vodka. Why the heck would I drink this crap? And it was edgy and it was almost like, I don't want to say scotch, but like a brandy. It was like a brandy. And I said, I was really, now I get angry. How dare they call this a vodka? I start getting pissed off.
This won't be
an idiot's going to pay for this kind of thing. I said, this is the stupidest thing I've ever
seen.
At
those prices, this will not be on the market for more than 12 months.
Yeah, I thought it was nuts. But this is what they're passing off. I mean, this is beyond all those stupid flavored vodkas they have.
Yeah, which I don't like those either. You want a pepper vodka? Take and get some Thai peppers, like about 5 of them is all you need. By the way, don't use too many, and just drop it in the vodka and put the vodka on the shelf and leave it there for 6 months. Right. You'll have delicious pepper flavored vodka.
Oh, great for Bloody Mary.
Yeah, but you got to be careful. I made a batch with way too many peppers, and oh man, it just blows your head off.
Right,
you have to be careful.
Anyway, I just want to talk about this because this is kind of like this is
like the Bitcoins of vodka.
Yeah, this is jumping the shark, vodka style.
Unbelievable.
You know, yeah, I was so aggravated about this.
Yeah,
but apparently. Anyway,
all right. So let's see what we got.
Let's take a look at some of the stocks that we have now. We haven't been around talking about this in a couple of weeks. And let me mention that, of course, this is just a game that we play. We do have this every once in a while. We do have I put up on the website on Disciplined Investor and say, hey, go take a look at these to remind you that you can look at these because they are ticking live when the markets are open through the Google spreadsheet. And you get the stock and our thesis and the current price that we bought it, which is usually the opening on the Wednesday after the show. And we have a rule that is a 10% maximum drawdowns trailing stop on this. But the most important part is that this is just a game and we don't recommend buying or selling any of the securities we talk about. And I or John or our families or clients may own these. And we do put that in the little disclaimer box on the side. But you want to take a little discussion, a little walk through what's going on?
Yeah, I got a couple winners that are hanging in there. They haven't sat back big enough to kick me off of them, which is Live Nation, which is up 23%, and Cree.
Yeah, Cree. That was the lighting that you had an idea about. And
the idea was I saw one of the owners buying the stock like crazy, and why would he be doing that? That's the way I see it. That's apparently my only successful strategy.
So stick with it.
I'm going to. I don't have anything for this week, though.
Can I just mention something? Do you notice that your Netflix isn't on the list?
Yeah, I noticed that. Did I lose the 10%?
Mm-hmm. You did. Sorry. Very sorry.
Well, you know, again, it was just a, it was just based on the old Netflix theories and whatever.
Yeah, with Netflix, you have to have like a wider range, because I got to tell you, Netflix is that kind of stock that, you know, Reed Hastings is now basically security law changed because of him after that whole situation where he posted.
Right. Yes.
Well, they said it was okay. Now he comes out last week with something like in the last 3 months or some ridiculous length of time, 4 billion hours of Netflix was watched. Hmm. I don't even know what that means. I don't know either. Crazy number. Crazy number.
But be stuck on the
listen,
menu
Amazon.
Page.
We're short on Amazon, up 3.5%. Corning up 5.5%. The Corn Fund. Crazy enough, corn just tanked down. It's up 10.5%.
Yeah, I thought it was an outrageous call at the time, and I'm really amazed you nailed it.
Oh, thank you. That was a good one. Let's see what we got here. Netflix, American AIG is flattened down a little bit. New Star Energy, another insider buying, is up nicely at up 7.5%. See, the names that you don't recognize is because they're just like an AGCO and RCM Technologies, whatever those are.
Yeah.
They're down and up a little bit. Now, I have a couple of ideas. So we have Google coming out with earnings this week.
Right.
Now, we get a little sneak peek in a way because we see the numbers from Yahoo. We also see some of the things that are happening in the space where you have a technology stock that runs up like crazy, particularly that has a footprint in the phone business. And you kind of add that all together, and you have to wonder after this big run-up whether or not it's kind of run a little bit beyond its level. So I'm going to take a shot, especially because it's free money with Google.
I think that's a good one.
And actually, if you look at the charts, we did alert this last week as a short for Trigger Point Research. And the interesting thing is that if you look at the chart, it's in a really vulnerable zone on the downside, and it's just kind of like laying right at the top of that level. Let me just mention, I just got a Twitter that just popped up that gold over the last few days just wiped out $560 billion of central bank money.
Wow.
Yep.
That now, can't be good.
No, it's probably not good. But you know what? They print more.
Yeah, well, it does the job.
It doesn't hurt them. It's not their money anyway. It's like kind of monopoly money. Seriously, what do they care? The other one I thought of, okay, bird flu, right? So as soon as I started seeing some of the bird flu stuff come on.
So you went with a penny. So you decided to up the ante with a penny stock.
Yeah. Yeah. On a company that does not have approval for a product. Okay.
This is probably not a bad idea. I mean, this thing will go all over the place. You probably could get wiped. It could probably go up to, 250 and then go down back to this, and you'd be out, but then it'd go up to 5. Who knows?
Yeah. Well, we actually own this stock, and only a small amount of this for our clients, and it was actually up 15% on Friday, last Friday. It's been as high as about, like you said, two and something. But one of the things it has is it does have the potential for this, and there is some news that China did buy into this company to help along the process of their vaccines, and they are in that neighborhood. There's a couple other ones, SVA.
What's the deal? Well, let's talk about these guys. Do they have one of these crazy vaccine ideas where they found some new angle to the vaccine concept? Or
they have a vaccine that's in the approval, well, not the approval process, but in the testing phase. It's in whatever it was. Now, one of the applications was knocked down for them, and that was a problem. But supposedly, there's a new revival of this now with this bird flu situation. So, like I said, they don't have really any product to speak of, just a couple ideas. And if things get really hairy, you would suspect that, particularly in other countries that maybe have a much faster approval process, they may just zip it right through, because what the heck? I mean, people are dying anyway. You might as well give them something that maybe or maybe doesn't work. Might as well test it out live.
Hmm. That's a good speculation.
But they are, bird flu related. I mean, like I said, there's about Glaxo definitely has. There's some other companies that definitely have some drugs for it. But they're more of a – they don't really cure it. They treat it. Sometimes they work. Sometimes they don't. And, the speculative ones are a little bit more fun in that – there is the opportunity really to see some serious action, especially if they get a few dollars from somewhere. you know, if they get some kind of backing, it could really move. So they've been kind of moving and doing well, and they kind of, you know, sell off a little bit. And because it, but anyway, BioCryst Pharmaceuticals, BCRX.
I'll take a look at that. All right.
And you have nothing.
No, I got nothing. There's no big insiders buying anything, and I might be getting to the point where shorting is going to look good. But I don't know. I still think the market's got a ways to go on the upside.
Really?
Yeah, I'd like to see it crack 15,000 and then, you know, maybe take off. Because then the short opportunities are everywhere. It's like...
I don't see...
You don't see it.
I don't... It may happen. I'm not disagreeing because there was a lot of money flooding in the markets and all that. But what I don't see is the economics here, unless something radically changes.
And that's not going to happen.
Okay. And I don't see the earnings picture unless something radically changes. And I see there's huge headwinds, more than I've seen in the last 2 years, with the dollar being as high as it is and the world economies being as horrible as they are.
I mean, we should be at 6,000. I mean, come on.
No, I think that some – I mean, I would say, you know, back down to where, you know, 1250, 1200 on the S&P, maybe a little bit, depending on the stock, could do a lot of things. But I mean, even Caterpillar, I mean, think about this for 1 second. How low the Japanese stocks were. Now they're 57% higher than they were in the Nikkei, 57% up since November. All a product of killing the yen. And our stock market has gone up also. Some of the stocks that are related to foreign investing with the dollar moving higher are only down maybe 10%. Now think about that. That kind of move on a currency and the benefits of some of the things it does for exporters hasn't really hurt ours that much. So what's the big differential? One of two things. Either one, our stocks, the U.S. stocks are priced right or reasonably right for what is happening, and Japanese stocks are off their rocker and are going to come down like, you know, crazy. Or you know, or the opposite. I mean, something has to give, right? You can't have both doing that. So I think the greatest short coming up is going to be Japan. I think the Japanese bonds, you could short their bonds. That I mean, how much further those bonds are going to go down in yield? They're like 0.4 for a 10-year. And then their stock market, I don't think their earnings are going to catch up that fast. So right now, all you have is supporting it is hope that the central bank is going to do what they do. Basically, devalue their currency, thereby just naturally bringing their stocks up, you know, like a Zimbabwe kind of situation. And if, God forbid, they kind of turn the button on to the high and it's a little bit over the top and they create such a move on their currency that it can't be stopped and it keeps going, that can't be good either.
No. Well, the bond thing is interesting to me because, you know, all these guys, these superstar investors, you know, over the last 6 months or so have been talking about the big opportunity to short the bond market sometime this year. And yeah.
That's not working out so well.
Not yet.
Not yet. But if there is a bond market to
short. And by the way, when you say short the bond, what does that even mean? Does it mean corporate bonds? Is it really – everyone assumes it means the U.S. bonds, yeah, you know, our treasuries. But yeah, maybe it doesn't mean that.
Well, junk bonds had some problem. That's definitely – you know, they were overdone and they got kicked back a little bit. But no, when you talk about the bonds of Japan, if they're if our bonds here are at, you know, around number 2% for the 10-year and the Japanese equivalent is 0.4 and – you say to yourself, okay, what's going to happen? Will the Japanese bonds go to 2.2? Now, who in their right mind is going to buy that?
Nobody. I think you may have stumbled onto the key to the bond collapse. It may be Japan.
I
never even thought of that in a million years.
But you can put that on your chart. There's a single and a, I think, a double, the single and a leveraged inverse Japanese bond.
Oh, yeah? Let's look at it. Maybe before we close the show, maybe I'll throw it on here.
JGBD.
Okay, hold on a minute. JGBD.
Yeah.
Which will be it's $18. It's the PowerShares DB3X inverse. Wow, yep. That's pretty aggressive.
Yeah. So what's going to happen is that if Japanese bonds – so right now, if rates go up on Japanese bonds, if, for whatever reason, maybe they get downgraded, maybe – maybe people say, screw this. I'm not. Why would I? First of all, I'm going to buy Japanese bonds at 0.4. They're going to pop the yen down. How does that make any sense for me, especially if there's no real upside? Because how much further are the Japanese bonds going? And at the same time, I'm going to own them in Japanese yen, which is going down. Why would I do that? If I was in Japan and I owned Japanese bonds, I would say, screw this. I'm selling it. I'm going to buy the U.S. bonds at 2% and buy it in dollars so that it appreciates.
So this thing really hasn't fired off yet. I mean, it seems to have...
It was one or two days, but that was it.
Yeah, and then it's back. It seems to be going back down to... Mm-hmm. See, if it was going to go down 10%, it would be 1.8, so I'd have to get down to 16 to close me out. Yeah, let's put that on there.
Okay.
Also go for broke with that one.
Yeah.
3X inverse.
Yep.
But you're right. I mean, what if something's selling for no money... You know, or the interest rates are zero. I mean, it's not going to go reverse. They're not going to start, you know, paying people having to pay into the bond. Although they've been doing that in Cyprus and paying into the banks, but I don't think that's going to happen in Japan.
No, but the thing is that you just have to wonder what would hold money there if all this money should be and has been talked about fleeing Japan. And then buying foreign bonds and all that. I mean, they're going to buy foreign bonds. They're going to buy their own bonds. They're going to buy stocks. They're going to be buying. I mean, what else are they going to buy?
I don't know, but I'm sure wouldn't be buying those bonds.
Right.
All right.
There's no benefit. So no benefit at all. All right. Until next week.
Yeah. See you then.
Okay. Thanks. Bye bye.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, 'cause I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pocket, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a mint. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, 'cause I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.